You are listening to Hillary Topper On Air, the small business podcast to help you grow both personally and professionally. And now, here's your host, Hillary Topper.
Do you ever wonder how the food on your plate impacts your health and the health of our planet? I'm Hillary Topper, and this is Hillary Topper On Air. Today, I have the great pleasure of speaking with Stuart Waldner, an activist and author who invites readers to take the red pill as they escape the matrix. Hi, Stuart. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Hillary. Thank you so much. Pleasure to be here.
So can you tell our listeners a little bit about your background and about your nonfiction book, Escape the Matrix, Eat Plants, Feel Great, and Save the Planet?
Sure. So I live in the state of Kentucky, in Lexington, Kentucky. It's a beautiful state. Has, you know, some really wonderful, kind-hearted, loving people. My family's here, my friends. But unfortunately, we're also one of the least healthy states in the country. Unfortunately, Kentucky ranks 48th in health behaviors and 47th in health outcomes. And in fact, in 2020, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention ranked Kentucky's mortality rates in the top 10 nationally in the following categories. Cancer was number one, drug overdose number two, septicemia number three, chronic lower respiratory disease five, heart disease eight, and kidney disease 10. So that's six out of the top 10 Kentucky ranks in there. So I grew up in a state with a lot of unhealthy people. And because of that, I grew up with this mentality that it was getting a chronic condition was going to be inevitable. It was something everyone would have to deal with at some point in time. And that the best we could hope for was to try to manage it with pills, shots, or surgeries. And fortunately, at the age of 23 in 1985, I made a lifestyle change. And that's when I gave up eating all meat. And I did that because there were studies that came out saying that the saturated fat in meat was responsible for heart disease and would lead to strokes and heart attacks and things like that. And I knew I didn't want to become a statistic. I wanted to avoid a heart attack if at all possible. So that's when I gave up eating meat. And then I was happy to do that for many years. And then in 2008, I became 100% plant-based and I gave up dairy and eggs as well. And at that point, I gave up all animal-based foods because of the environmental and animal welfare issues in addition to health issues. So I started doing a lot of reading and studying on nutrition, health, animal welfare, the environment, climate change. And, you know, what I've discovered when I was doing all this reading is that the food on our plates is connected to all of these things. And I've really struggled to make sense of why, when there's so much scientific evidence that our food choices are having such negative repercussions, not only in our lives, but on the planet and for the animals, I struggle to make sense of it all. And that's when I realized, you know, this has been normalized to us, and this is something that we were taught to do. And that's when I came up with the idea that we're living in the matrix. And what I mean by that is I'm using the world in the Matrix movies as a metaphor for our world. So in the Matrix movies, artificial intelligence has taken over the planet and is using humans as their energy source. And I say that our world is like that because humans have taken over this planet. You know, we have just had the 8 billionth person born on the planet late last year. So there's 8 billion humans here, and we're using farmed animals as our energy source. And that's why I say our world is the matrix.
Cool. So talk to me about three top reasons. You know, you alluded to it a little bit, of why people should stop eating meat right now.
Well, the three big reasons are for our health, the health of the planet, and the health of the animals. So Many of the chronic conditions that Americans suffer with are attributed to animal-based foods. In fact, you know, the National Institute of Health sent a memo to all physicians in the United States recommending that the doctors suggest that their patients adopt a plant-based lifestyle, especially their patients with cardiovascular disease, heart disease, and diabetes. And, you know, guess when that memo was sent, Hillary? Do you have any idea?
No idea.
It was 2013. That was 10 years ago that the National Institute of Health told doctors, hey, you know, recommend your patients adopt this lifestyle because it's that powerful.
Wow.
And, you know, I don't know about you, my doctors never talked to me about the food I eat.
Never.
Yeah.
They well, could get less.
Yeah, yeah. You know, doctors don't talk about the food with their patients because they receive very little nutritional training. The little bit of information that doctors do learn in medical school about food is how foods interact with medications. So they learn about, you know, peanut allergies or grapefruit or different things that may interact with the pharmaceutical that they're prescribing, but they don't talk about the overall nutrition of a person's diet. And this is a real problem because so many of the chronic conditions that we're suffering from and that we're taking pills for, the root cause is the food we're eating because it's not healthy for us. So that's a major reason right there. And I list in my book, you know, the top 10 leading causes of death of Americans. And I go through each one of them and I talk about the science that says eating a whole foods, plant-based lifestyle will help you avoid, you know, this chronic condition. It'll help you avoid a heart attack, help you avoid a stroke, help you avoid cancer, help you avoid Alzheimer's disease, help you avoid a pulmonary condition. So the list goes on, and the science is definitive. And I try to put that in my book because, you know, I think that, you know, I'm all about helping people make informed decisions. And once people see the science, I think it'll help them make better choices, starting, you know, with the food on their plates and choices we're making in the grocery aisles. And then another part, the second reason to escape the matrix is for the planet. You know, we're talking a lot about climate change now, and it's in the media almost every day. We're seeing extreme weather events happening all over the planet. And the mainstream media is saying, you know, we need to move away from burning fossil fuels because doing so creates carbon dioxide, which is a potent greenhouse gas. And we need to move away from driving gasoline powered vehicles to electric vehicles, you know, so that's in the mainstream media. Almost every day you read something about those two things, but mainstream media never talks about the food that we're eating and the environmental and climate change impact of the food we're eating. And this is a huge problem because climate scientists say that there's no way we can achieve our climate goals without a widespread adoption of a plant-based lifestyle. So to ignore this is you know, extremely dangerous and short-sighted of us. And I go into a lot of detail about why the matrix is so bad for the environment and the many ways it contributes to climate change. And we can talk more about that if you want to. And then the third component is animal welfare. You know, we are taught that certain animals are food and certain animals are pets. But a study that I share in my book says that American children ages 4 to 8, you know, see all animals as being pet-like. And 84% of the children surveyed said it's wrong to eat a cow. And 79% said it was wrong to eat a pig. But 41% said bacon came from plants. So children are confused and don't know about where the food they're eating comes from. And, you know, one of the reasons why is because parents have this conflict within themselves about eating animal-based foods. You know, at that age, you're teaching your children to love and take care of animals, but yet they're feeding them dead animals, you know, on their plates 3 times a day. And when children ask about, well, where does this food come from? It's one of the things the study said, it's one of the most biggest areas where parents will actually deceive their children because they don't want to tell their child that what they're eating comes from an animal. And this is a real problem. The scientists who did the study said, look, children are unsuspecting meat eaters. They're doing it and they don't know they're doing it and they're being taught to do it. And that's why I say we're in the matrix. This has been normalized to us. It's been passed down from generation to generation. I never made a conscious choice to eat an animal-based food. I don't know about you, Hillary, but my parents taught me to eat chicken and beef and hamburgers and hot dogs and bologna. I mean, that's what I was taught to do. And I thought it was normal, necessary, and nutritious. And my parents did that because they thought the same thing. And they thought that they were helping me grow up to be the most healthy version of myself. So this is something that gets normalized and we're taught to do it. And the study was saying, you know, we need to interrupt that in young children. What happens is when we become pre-adolescent, our minds develop in a way that we do the mental gymnastics and acrobatics that are required to say, okay, these animals are pets and we love these animals and these animals are food and we don't care about these animals. And this is this happens because of the culture that we're growing up in. Because, you know, other cultures have different categories. They put animals in different categories, you know, like in Korea and in Asia and different places, they eat dog. Mm-hmm. Well, that would be totally, you know, most Americans would say that's horrible. We should never eat a dog. But in another country, it's considered normal. And so this is because of speciesism. It's something that our culture tells us, and that's something that we learn as we grow up, and then we stop thinking about it. Once we've put animals in certain categories, then it just becomes a mindless activity to continue to eat animals and not think about their welfare or whether we should even be doing it.
So let's talk about this for a moment in terms of not eating meat, right? Mm-hmm. Why do you think people struggle with going vegetarian? I mean,
well, I think it's because the whole idea, like I said, is contrary to what we've grown up being taught is normal, necessary, and nutritious. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's deeply embedded in our culture. And it, like I said, is something we're taught from a very early age. So the idea of giving that up is something that people have a hard time wrapping their brains around, I guess. For me, it wasn't that much of an issue because, like I said, I did it for the health reasons primarily. And then as I became more and more aware of the environmental and climate change reasons, and then also the animal welfare reasons, it just seemed like a win-win-win. It's something that just made so much sense to me to do. And, you know, I'm perfectly healthy. And, you know, Benjamin Franklin said, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. And I think my giving up meat at the age of 23 and all animal-based foods in 2008 is the prevention I needed. So I wouldn't need a cure. I've avoided all of the chronic health conditions that I mentioned that plague so many Kentuckians. And I'm living in the same state. I'm drinking the same water, breathing the same air. But what I'm not doing is I'm not eating the same foods. And in fact, you know, my doctor gave me a great testimonial for my book because I'm such an outlier in his practice because of my lifestyle. And he has said that. So I know that if I can do it, other people can do it too. But it goes against the grain of our culture. And, you know, the meat and dairy industry advertises their products to us from a very early age. I mean, we're targeted as children to want to have McDonald's and fast food and animal products. In fact, they spend a lot of money doing so. And some of the most effective campaigns that have happened in my lifetime are from the meat and dairy industry. So we have, I don't know, beef, it's what's for dinner. Do you know that phrase? Yeah, you know?
Yeah, definitely. And that was big.
It was huge. And that was started in 1980, in the late 80s, I think. And 30 years later, I think 80% of Americans, you know, recognize that slogan. That's how powerful it is. And I just realized this year, I just discovered that it has come back. The Beef Council has brought that advertisement back, and they're using their spokesperson is Tony Romo, who was, you know, an NFL quarterback, you know, a leader of men on the football field. He's, you know, someone who is in a position of authority and leadership. And he's retired now, of course, but He's a spokesperson now for beef. And that leads a lot of credibility and just reinforces this message of tying, you know, masculinity with beef, and that it's, you know, it's all American and it's pure and it's healthy for us when, you know, the science says otherwise. But we get these messages throughout the course of our lifetime, and it convinces us that it would be risky to give these products up. For instance, you have other advertisements like milk, it does the body good. The incredible edible egg. Got milk, pork, the other white meat. These are advertising campaigns by the meat and dairy industry that convinces us that we need their products, and that if we were to give them up, our health would suffer. In fact, most Americans think that if you become plant-based, you're going to wreck your health, when it's the totally opposite is true. The science says that you will preserve your health. Like, one of the things that I learned, Hillary, in researching my book, one of the most amazing things I learned was about lung function. So, you know, I knew that, you know, smoking cigarettes was bad for your lung function. I've had aunts and uncles who died of lung cancer because of a lifestyle of smoking cigarettes. And Kentucky is a big tobacco growing state, or used to be. It's less so now. But what I read in studies by the National Institute of Health really blew my mind. And that said, they said that the standard American diet it has an adverse effect on lung function. And they said it was the equivalent of chronic smoking, that, you know, the standard American diet was like smoking a pack of cigarettes every day. Oof. That blew my mind. And they said that eating whole fruits and vegetables, seeds, nuts, legumes had the opposite effect, that it preserves lung function. So two of the top leading causes of death have to do with chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, and then other diseases of the respiratory system. So we have two out of the top 10 leading causes of death has to do with lung function. And we have studies that show that the standard American diet is like smoking a pack of cigarettes every day. So that's how powerful it is.
Wow, that is absolutely crazy. Thank you for shedding light on this. Before we move on, I just have to say I'm very appreciative of our sponsors and must take the time out to thank them. Please support our sponsors and tell them that you heard about them on Hillary Topper On Air. Special thanks to the Bogalis Law Group, a law firm representing plaintiffs in medical malpractice action, and the Russo Law Group, Long Island's signature elder law, special needs, and estate planning law firm. Now back to you, Stuart. So we're talking about the meat industry and how you're recommending people to stop eating meat. Mm-hmm. Can you talk to us about the factory farms and why a concentration of power is in a few hands, and that's a problem?
Yes. One of the things that I discovered was the power that the meat and dairy industry has and the influence it has on our politicians. You know, I think most people realize that corporations lobby for laws that favor their industry. And most people would probably assume that the fossil fuel industry has a lot of money and spends a lot of money on lobbying Congress and elected officials, and also contributes a lot of money to political campaigns so that they can get officials elected who will then, you know, be favorable to their industry. I think most people know that is going on, especially with fossil fuel industry. But I think what would shock people and what shocked me was that agricultural is spending just as much money on lobbying Congress and making political contributions to candidates. And even they, compared to the resources or the revenues, the agricultural industry is spending 33% more than the fossil fuel industry is in contributing to political campaigns. So I didn't realize that the agricultural industry was doing that. And so that has a huge impact on the laws that get passed and the subsidies that are given to animal-based foods. So for instance, you know, another thing that surprised me was that the meat industry spent $200 million lobbying Congress against climate change legislation between the year 2000 and 2019. So why would the meat industry be lobbying Congress against climate change legislation? $200 million of it over 19 years is because they know they have a huge climate change problem, and they don't want any laws being passed that would curtail their activities. And this is just how embedded the meat and dairy industry is with our government. In fact, you know, the subsidies that our government gives to the meat and dairy industries are, you know, off the charts. So in the year 2020, our government gave the beef industry $9 billion in handouts, in direct and indirect payments to the beef industry, $9 billion in 1 year, just so we can have a $4 hamburger. I mean, this is crazy. And for every dollar, to show you how uneven the playing field is, for every dollar a lentil grower gets from our government, a cattle rancher gets $480. Wow. And, you know, lentils are a great plant-based source of protein. Mm-hmm. But a lentil grower gets a dollar and a cattle rancher gets $480. And this is because the influence that the meat and dairy industry has on our elected officials, and it makes it an uneven playing field. And so that's why, you know, meat and dairy products, Hillary, are luxury items. You know, they are luxury items still today. It's just that we're not paying the price of that as a consumer. Our government is subsidizing these foods to make them affordable to us. But if the government wasn't involved, no one would spend the money it costs to have a hamburger. So in my book, there was a study done that they said that the true cost of a hamburger could be $200, depending on whether the Amazon rainforest was affected in any way during the carbon, you know, cycle of creating that meat. You know, the rainforest is being, you know, clear cut to either grow crops for cattle or to raise cattle. So a true cost of a burger could be $200. Now, who could afford a $200 hamburger? You know, not many of us. And, you know, and so, you know, we have this, so they are luxury items, and we need to keep that in mind. And I really like what Business Insider said. They said a hamburger isn't something bought and paid for, but a symbol of a debt that one day must be repaid. And so for everyone who's eating a hamburger or eating inside the matrix, they're creating a greater and greater amount of debt. And so that's why I encourage everyone who's a parent or grandparent, or everyone who wants to be a parent or grandparent, to escape the matrix. Because with every burger, we're adding to that debt, and we're ensuring that future generations will have a debt so vast that they could never repay it. So this is the harm that we're doing to the planet, and it doesn't get discussed in mainstream media. Like I said, we're talking about, you know, clean energy and driving electric cars when, you know, the food on our plate has a bigger impact. In fact, and I'm sorry I'm rambling here, but I'm kind of on a roll.
No, it's good.
Oxford University did a study, a five-year study, and they analyzed 38,000 farms in 119 countries. And they determined that an American could lower their carbon footprint by 73%. There's no other single act that an American could do that could lower their carbon footprint by that much. You couldn't, you know, putting solar panels on your house, driving an electric car. Nothing comes close to eating a whole foods, plant-based lifestyle and adopting that. You could lower your carbon footprint by 73%. And, you know, that's not talked about in mainstream media. No one knows this information. In fact, just last week, I think the New York Times did a survey, and they were asking Americans, you know, which activity will lower your carbon footprint the most? And they had like 15 items on there. And one was like carpooling. Another was, you know, buying energy efficient appliances. Another was reducing your flights. And then at the bottom of the list, it said adopting a plant-based lifestyle. And you had to rank those as having a low impact, medium impact, or high impact. Of course, I knew the answer to the last one. It has a high impact, but only 6% of Americans got that answer right about a plant-based lifestyle lowering their personal carbon footprint. And so this is not being talked about. And so Americans don't realize the power of a plant-based lifestyle to avert the worst case scenarios of climate change. And my book talks about all the reasons why. We can dive into that some if you want.
This is great information. Thank you so much for shedding light. I mean, I had absolutely no idea. So this really opens up my eyes as well. And okay. I'm sure it does for my listeners. So tell us, Stuart, how can people get in touch with you and learn more about your book, Escape the Matrix?
I'm at stuartwaldner.com, and I'm on Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn, and they can find my book on Amazon. And so I encourage people to choose the red pill. You know, the red pill is, again, I'm using the Matrix movie as a metaphor for our world, and Morpheus offered Mr. Anderson the red pill, and he chose the red pill and became Neo. And so we know how that story goes. So we have a choice. We can choose the blue pill or the red pill. And, you know, choosing the blue pill is tantamount to maintaining the status quo. And, you know, we know what's going to happen if we maintain the status quo. Just read it in the paper. You know we're on a speeding train. It's a runaway train almost. You know, I'm hoping that we can avert it, but we're getting close to where we're going to be on a speeding train that we cannot stop. So choosing the blue pill is tantamount to maintaining the status quo. We're going to see more climate change, more emerging infectious diseases. We're going to see more environmental degradation. We're going to see more mass extinction rates. We're going to see more declining health. The list goes on and on. That's the blue pill. And the red pill is what I'm offering the reader. And people, like you said earlier, we don't know that we have a choice. We think that we have to eat animal-based foods in order to be healthy. And this is because of, like I said, a lifetime of advertising. But we do have a choice. And I hope that people will read my book, follow the science, and make decisions based on the science, not what we've been taught. Because I think we've been misled in many instances throughout our lifetime as to the importance of meat and dairy. You know, they have these, we think that we have to have them, but, you know, the meat does not have a monopoly on protein, and dairy products do not have a monopoly on calcium. So we can get those nutrients in other foods that are healthier for us. And so I just encourage everyone to choose the red pill, escape the matrix, eat plants, feel great, and save the planet.
Thank you so much, Stuart, for being on the show and for really opening up our eyes to this major issue that's going on. I also want to thank our sponsors once more, the Pagalis Law Group, a law firm representing plaintiffs in medical malpractice action. For more information, visit thepagalislawgroup.com and the Russo Law Group, Long Island's signature elder law, special needs, and estate planning law firm. For additional information, visit vjrussolaw.com. And last but not least, I want to thank you, our listeners, for tuning in. Make sure that you go out and buy Escape the Matrix by Stuart Waldner and check it out. I'm sure you can get it on Amazon. And if you want more information on this show, you can visit our website at hillarytopper.com. We'll also have the link to the book on there. Or you can find us on Spotify, iTunes, Google Play, Amazon, Alexa, you name it, we're out there. Have a great week, and we'll see you next time.